21. Wayne nodded as the trucks ahead waited to cross the highway.
"Well then, Hoyd," he said to the coachman, "that's all I know about how to pickle vegetables."
"Thank you," Hoyd said.
"'S all right," Wayne said. "I'm a bastion of useful information, I am."
The truck ahead of them pulled forward, crossing the vast motorway filled with 16s upon 16s of cars. Hoyt moved their truck up, next in line.
"Can I have my harmonica back now?" Hoyt asked.
Wayne fished in his pocket and brought it out.
"I traded you fair for this."
"You did nothing of the sort."
"I did,"
Wayne said.
"The trade is in the glove box. You're always too watchy for me to slip things into your pocket. How'd you get so good at that anyways? You're a Ruston coachman."
"Practice," Hoyd said solemnly. "A very great amount of practice."
He opened the glove box and a bright white creature with a long hairless tail peeked out.
"Wayne, a live rat."
"I call him Sir Squeakins," Wayne said. "I wasn't going to bring him, but he snuck into my pocket, he did. So I figure that's the 17th time you've let him escape his cage, Wayne. Better give him to someone responsible."
"You are a uniquely bizarre individual," Hoyd said, smiling as the rat crawled up his arm. "But trade accepted, I guess."
"Great, great," Wayne replied. "He likes strawberries and booze, but don't give him none of the booze, 'cause he's a rat."
"Noted."
They waited at the edge of the wide roadway, and Wayne, he'd had this feeling all day today. Something was happening, something important.
"You ever fail," Wayne said, "like you wish life was like the stories?"
"What do you mean?" Hoyd asked.
"There's always a good ending in those stories. The ones my ma used to tell. They meant something. People. They were worth something."
"I think we live stories every day," Hoyd replied. "Ones that we will remember and tell and shape like clay to be what we need them to be."
"The last story my ma told me," Wayne said, "was about a lawman. Funny, huh? That I'd end up becoming one. Except he was a hero. And I'm... well, on me."
"You do yourself a disservice, Master Wayne," Hoyd said softly.
"Can't be no hero if you're a villain, Hoyd."
"But in most of the stories, it is the villain who knows the hero best."
Wayne chewed on that, watching the flow of cars on the road ahead, and found himself imagining that roadway as a river, because a part of him wished that what Hoyd said could be true. Then he waited some more, and some more.
Damn, someone really ought to come up with a way to make it so cars that wanted to cross had a better chance.
Maybe you could hire someone to stand at the corner and fire a gun in the air when too many cars were blocking the way and frighten them to move faster? Anyway, that zooming of cars, that road could be a wide river. Yeah, a river of stone and steel, faster than any other river in the world.
He smiled, remembering a calm, beautiful voice that had kept his world solid for so long.
"Yeah, there's a bandit to be chased," he thought, "but it's still wrong. Where's the hero? He should be here, but he stayed behind."
In a lull, Hoyd gunned the truck and they scooted across, earning only 3 honks from cars that had to slow. Pretty good, considering. You could cross even the fastest river, full of the worst kinds of rocks, if you were in a bigger rock yourself. No need to fly, like Jack had in the story. This wasn't cheating. It was just a smarter way, it was. Followed by the last of their convoy, they pulled into the dim warehouse, lit by some unlatched windows up along the tops of the walls. Why put the windows up there, where nobody could see out of them?
Oh, right. Illegal stuff. Yeah, that made sense. "Thanks for the ride, Hoyd," Wayne said, pulling out his gangster hat.
A worn wool cap traded off one of the thugs they'd caught.
You might want to keep your head down if this next part gets shooty. Hope it won't, though.
Understood, Master Wayne, Hoyd said. Best of luck.
Wayne nodded, and it was time to become someone else. He scrunched up his face, squinting like Franis did. That was the guy he'd gotten the hat off of. A fellow Wayne's height and age, but more weathered. By time, by smokes, by the things he'd done. Wayne already wore a wig to change his hair color, along with a bit of rubber on his chin to square it out, and some makeup to sink his eyes. With the hat, he was Franis, missing only one thing. He climbed out and swaggered. Franis sure knew how to swagger.
Vandel, wearing the cycle's body, a man named Granks, met him outside the truck. The others waited quietly. All those dirty Connors in the trucks would jump out only when they had someone important to catch, someone more than a bunch of useless low-level cretins. Not that Franis was a cretin. He just needed work, you know? You started by taking a job at the docks, but work there grew tight, and the schedules were so bad. Then you heard your friend Vin had a job with someone who paid better, and all you had to do was move some boxes. Who could get into trouble from moving boxes? Even if you did have to keep a gun on you at all times and be ready to shoot. He swaggered in beside Vandel in his fancy suit and fancier body.
It's uncanny, the Convra said, how you do that. You imitate a person nearly as well as one of my kin.
Just gotta find someone what looks a little like you, Wayne said, and make up the difference. Also, stay in character.
Right, the Condra said.
He wasn't half bad, considering what a fussy little thing he normally was. He wore Granks's body well, a gangster who had proven himself enough to be elevated, given a title and some authority while the rest of them were basically hired hands. They crossed the vast chamber toward two fellows who emerged from the perimeter. Indeed, a lot of fellows began moving in. A good 40 armed men. A local gang. That was more people than the constables had.
We'll have surprise, though, Wayne thought. And the trucks were armored, offering cover. It should be fine, with Wayne and Maracy, not to mention a faceless immortal, on their side. Milan was quite the fighter. Vandel should be handy in a scrap, too.
The two fellows that stepped up to meet with them wore work clothing, suspenders, trousers, buttoned shirts. Not good enough. They needed at least a suit, the rank that Granks would report to, and preferably a sequence or even a fully promoted series. There were only a couple of those in the set at a time, though, and one leader, the Key. Wayne Franis didn't want any of those important jobs. He wasn't interested in wearing the fancy clothing and drawing the gunfire. Pay him his wages and let him pretend he wasn't doing nothing wrong.
Cycle, said the stouter of the two men, nodding.
He would probably be a fellow named Dip, according to the interrogations, or maybe he was one named Embreer. Whoever he was, he glanced at Franis, but didn't say anything to him directly.
You can leave the trucks, he told Vandel. Gather your men in the two vans outside and head home. Your success has been noted.
Fine,
Vandel grumbled, using a pretty good version of Granks's accent.
But I need to talk to the sequence. There's an issue. The radio line isn't good enough,
maybe Dip said, glancing at his companion.
I have reason to believe the radios are compromised, Vandel said. The sequence is here, isn't he?
That was Wayne's suggestion. The leader types, they always hung around and watched. Didn't trust good, honest-ish thieves like Franis to do their job right. So yeah, a higher-level member of the set would be here, somewhere. Sure as Franis wasn't Franis right now, but was somebody kind of close as someone could get, unless he could wear Franis's bones, which was cheating, and that was that. Anyway, important negotiations, life or death, surrounded by 40 armed men, better pay attention.
I will convey your message to the sequence, maybe Dip said.
That won't be good enough, Vandel said.
There is a problem, a very large problem.
The two thugs looked at one another. Damn, they were suspicious. Wayne glanced at the people at the perimeter, who would need only one offhand comment to start shooting. So he made a quick decision. The fellow wouldn't be the one named Dip, because who would put a guy named Dip in charge of anything?
Embryer,
he said, using a slightly modified version of his own accent, dock worker but overlaid with the kind of sniveling accent these thugs had all adopted. People what worked together, they started to pick up one another's ways of speaking.
Can we talk a spell?
The stop man glanced at him, then nodded.
Yeah, Franis?
Wayne waved him over, and they slipped to the side. Vendel started up a conversation with the other man, going over the inventory they'd been able to acquire.
What's up, Franis? The thug said quietly, then thumbed over his shoulder. The cycle never cares about things like this. Just does what he's told. Brain like wet concrete,
Wayne agreed softly.
Can you believe he's the one what got chosen?
I can believe it, Embryer said. He never questions, unlike you.
Hey, Wayne said, I only question when my paycheck is coming.
Don't we all,
Embryer said, then shot him a sideways glance.
You've been getting some sun.
Damn, the makeup hadn't been light enough. Could he get the man to ask after his father? Wayne had some good info from the real Franis on his father.
You know, heavy work. Like Dad always said, best work is the kind you do with your arms and back.
Yeah, but don't you live in a cavern?
I don't live in the Rustin Cavern, Wayne said. What, you think I stay down there in the dark?
Embryer grunted.
How's your sister?
Sister? Oh, Rusts. Wayne glanced at Embryer. That smile.
You stay away from my damn sister, Wayne said.
Just asking,
Embryer said, raising his hands.
Ruin. No need to come out swinging.
Look, Wayne said softly. Cycle isn't acting strange. He's worried. Saw some Lady Connor sniffing around our base. Dark hair. You know the one?
The man cursed under his breath.
Why didn't you say so?
I just Rustin did. But Cycle wants to report it. Thinks he'll get you-know-who's attention. For spotting a Connor what we know is likely to be around. Rustin, idiot.
But Embryer had gone a little pale at the implication that the Cycle wanted to draw Trell's attention. Best to ease away from that. Wayne threw his arm around the fellow's shoulder and walked them back toward the others.
Sides, he said to Embryer, you can forget my sister. I've met this woman. She'd be great for you.
Really?
Embryer asked. Sure. She thought Ulip was handsome.
Ulip? The coloss-blooded who looks like a frog?
Same one,
Wayne said, rejoining the others. Embryer shook his head.
Insanity.
He nodded to Vendel.
I'll go get the sequence. You can start your men unloading.
Vendel turned, waving for the process to begin. Hopefully, Maracy would keep her head down like Wayne had told her. She was too damn obvious, that one. Needed to learn how to scrunch her face up and become someone she wasn't once in a while. Really helped with the self-loathing.
Still shouldn't have crossed the river without the hero,
Wayne thought, as the two thugs jogged to the rear of the room and opened a door.
Seriously, Vendel asked Wayne, how do you do that? You don't even have their bones.
Gotta have fewer sticks up your posterior, Vendel, Wayne said. Yank one or two out and you'll see.
It's patently unfair, he said. A mortal should not be able to stand beside one of the bearers of the contract and seem a fair match to their skill in imitation.
Oh, jealousy, Wayne said.
He breathed it in.
Smells like cherry blossoms. Also, stop breaking character, you sod.
Finally, two figures in nicer clothing stepped from a darkened room at the back of the warehouse. Perfect. That was what they'd wanted. Hopefully, the waiting constables could... Suddenly, the outer doors slammed open and figures in brown began flooding in, pointing guns at the thugs. "Drop your weapons," a voice shouted. "This is a sting."
"It's the heat,"
Wayne said, slipping his gun out of his holster. Vendel grabbed his arm.
"Oh, yeah," Wayne said, letting his arm be lowered. "Right, right. I forget sometimes."
But these weren't their people. What the hell? All around, the thugs were turning, but nobody fired, because more and more figures in brown were pouring in. At least 100 constables wearing the shield and tortoise symbol of Bilming. They were local constables. Maracy's sting had just been stung.